Hola amigos and welcome to Willie's View Podcast. Today's Tuesday, January 19th, 2021, and I have a special guest, David A. Gregory. You know him as Robert Ford from One Life to Live, and he's also a writer. Welcome, David.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right, so before we start, I want to know where you're at and how's the weather over there?
I am quarantining in Ohio. And as of today, the weather's great. Yesterday it was, the last couple days it's been kind of gloomy, but there is not a cloud in the sky today. I sound like a weatherman. It's beautiful. It's beautiful outside.
Oh, that's good. So so everything's going good? Are you guys on shutdown over there?
Yeah, I don't know if it's shut down technically, but we're staying indoors most of the time. Maybe we'll head to the grocery store and take walks every day and stuff like that, but for the most part, we've been pretty close to, you know, adhering the rules and making sure that we stay protected.
Oh, that's good. That's good to hear. Okay, so how did you get the acting bug?
You know, I can't remember ever not wanting to be an actor. I feel like I've always wanted to do it. My parents were really good about taking me to theater when I was a kid, a community theater, and so I guess at some point I asked them if I could audition for something because they would hold local auditions, and the town I grew up in Fairbanks, Alaska, was very pro-arts and arts-centric, so there was always opportunity, and I feel like, as my dad says, you throw fuel on the fire. If you have an interest in something and there's opportunity for it, then they both kind of combine. And I don't ever remember not wanting to do it. It's always been something I wanted to do.
Oh, that's great. I like that. Okay, so in the role of Robert Ford, you portrayed on One Life to Live, which moments would you say were your favorites?
You know, any scenes, obviously, with my brothers or John Shipp or Jessica Lichia playing my parents. So anything with the family. I also, you know, obviously worked with Bree Williamson and Brittany Underwood a lot. And those were my romantic interests on the show. So those are given for me. Those are characters that I always loved interacting with. But I really, it's going to sound weird, I really enjoyed getting arrested. I feel like there was a whole storyline there where I was a suspect in something, and I can't remember exactly the details, but I remember being in jail and being interviewed by John McCain.
Yeah, the mystery murders.
Yes. So Michael Easton is John McCain, and I think Gina Tognoni was there in as Kelly in her capacity there, and those were just fun scenes. There was a time where I think Clint Buchanan was trying to frame me for something, so he had me beat up. I remember filming that scene on my birthday. Weirdly enough, and he was like, "I'm really sorry, we have to do this on your birthday." I said, "No, this is a lot of fun." He had like henchmen that he would bring in, and I don't know, it was really great. So that storyline I really enjoyed a lot. It sort of set some kind of precedent, because since then, and even on that show a lot, the writers would have me get beat up a lot, and other shows have done that too. So apparently I'm good at taking a punch, I guess. It's a weird stereotype.
I love that, but what I love, you're going to crack up, but I enjoyed the moments with you and the twist, which was cool. That was great casting. You guys literally look like brothers in the role.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We certainly act like it. All of us are still in touch. We're on a text chain together, and they're great guys. Nick and Lenny are they're the best.
Yeah, I love those scenes. But the ones that I love the most also was you against David Vickers. You and your little zingers were so funny. Like, he was trying... Remember? Remember you guys did the July 4th or something episode where you're wearing your Speedos and he's showing off?
Exactly. Every year around the 4th of July, I repost that. And, you know, there's been a couple years where I've been maybe not going to post it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're talking about the birth of the nation and, you know, these great historical ramifications of the 4th of July. And there we are in our speedos. But, he's hilarious, as you know.
Yes, I love that. That was my ultimate favorite, along with the Brotherhood, and also the scenes with you and Langston's was also the best too. I love all of that. It just all the scenes, you're just wonderful. Okay, so were there any possible stories that you felt as an actor that your character did not get to explore?
I'm not sure specifically. I mean, they had me doing everything, and I'm really, really grateful for.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, the writers took an interest, you know. I never felt like I wasn't being used, but there were a couple scenes between me and Gina Tognoni, as I think she played Telly Kramer.
Yes, yes.
And weirdly enough, where I thought, oh, this could go somewhere, this is really interesting, and then I read an interview with her, they were like, well, who would you like to play opposite? She was like, I'm not going to say, but it's definitely one of the Ford brothers.
Oh.
I took that to mean that she thought those scenes were just as interesting, and I thought that would be really, really fun, because there was a really cool dynamic between us that I had forgotten about until I saw that you had that question written down, and... you know, obviously she's a great actress, but I think those two characters really, you know, butted heads in a great way, and I thought that was great.
Oh my god, that would have been like epic.
I really thought that's where they were going, and you know, who knows what would have happened had they more time? Because there was a time where, you know, Ford could have been with anybody because he likes to be with six people at once. So I'm sure that. That was on the table at some point.
Oh yeah, you just got my attention. I also like that one that you did with I think was it Oliver? Where you're shirtless in the apartment and his boyfriend gets upset because I think he's holding you tight so he can break your back with the muscle.
Yes, yes, he was trying to crack my back. Yeah. That was fun.
Oh my god!
Scott's a great sport, and I think it was Brett who was in that scene with us, and we had a good time.
Was that Ron that wrote all those scenes? Because they were oh my god, those scenes are memorable.
Yeah, you know, it's weird. The writers will write something, and then it's almost like if there's a little gimmick in it, or if there's something where the actors can play that's maybe not in the script, so like he's supposed to crack my back, but in the scene he's holding me, and then his boyfriend walks in, and so then he spins me around like in the air, and that's what people thought was so hilarious. But that wasn't necessarily in the script, I don't think. I could be wrong, but
it was cute because
that happens.
Yeah, it's cute because when he's talking to you, he still has his hands around your body.
Yes.
And you're like a ragdoll, like, hi, I'm Ford. I don't care where you are. Get my boyfriend's arms off of your body. It's like, that's not my fault. His arms are all literally around me. I can't let go.
Exactly. when we read it, we were laughing. And I feel like if the actors are laughing, you know, then it's and they understand that it's funny. You know, sometimes it's like, well, I don't really get the scene. But when we understand it, then we can better play it so that the audience can understand it. That was a perfect combination right there of Scott and the script. It really worked out.
And I think there was like a little inside joke I could see with the scenes. It was cute. Like, I mean, a lot of people got to touch you. as Robert Ford between David Vickers and Langston and everybody. Yeah, almost a lot of people got to like literally touch you, whether you were shirtless or not.
I feel like you're right. I feel like it was a running joke,
but it was cute because you're like the street guy. It's like, okay, I guess everybody's gonna touch me today, or you know, it's just a little.
Exactly right.
But it's so cute because you know you're strong. You're the muscular alpha. But you're so cute shy because you're like, all these people are touching my body. I think even Rex touched your body one time. Remember? He's like, oh, wow, strong arms. How much do you lift?
Wow. quite forgot about that.
Yeah, because Rex was curious about your strength, but he was trying to get a distraction from you, and he's like, "How much do you bench?" That's where people were teasing, "Oh, Rex must be bi because he's flirting with Ford." It's like, it's not Ford flirting with him, it's actually Rex. Rex just asked him how much he benches.
That makes sense, and I think there was a moment where, you know, in a couple of interviews earlier on, they were asking me if Ford was bi, and I was like, I don't know, but if that's the direction they go, then let's do it, because that just means more people he can be with, right? So,
yeah. Well, I think that would have been cool if he did get to flirt with Oliver, because that was some major chemistry right there. Just the idea, the way he was holding his hands, he wasn't letting go. I'm like, oh my God, could you imagine the scenario from there?
I also think Ford kind of flirted with everybody because he likes the attention.
So, oh, yeah.
Like, somebody jumped with me that was like, there's Ford, he can flirt with a rock. And I thought, well, yeah, I feel like at that point in his life, you know, before he settled down and became a dad and all of that, he just liked the attention.
Yeah, I like that. Ford's we needed that, and we really needed that in Landu, because nothing against the writers. We love Rex. But they kind of watered him down after a few years, because it seemed like he was, like, just going to be the whole family man. So when they brought in you, that kind of makes it up for it, and that kind of, like, lets you be the player, play with all these characters and One Life to Live, and man, you really did. That was really cool.
That's it, yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so, So, the scenes of you as Robert Ford with Langston were steamy. Were there any challenging moments during filming?
Not necessarily challenging. I'll say this. Brittany went to bat for me one day. You know, in the summers on the show, that's when typically, you know, kids are out of school, so they focus a little bit more on the younger storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And, so there's a lot more work, and you know, so the younger storylines, like me and some of the other younger characters, would have, you know, sometimes 80 or 90 pages a day. So I came in one day, and we were supposed to do one of those steamy scenes, but it was also very, very wordy. I think it's when Ford gets the hotel for them, and Marco is the bellboy at the hotel.
Yeah.
And I remember going in, and we ran the lines with Brittany, and Brittany can memorize anything very, very quickly, but I'm not so lucky. So she was very gracious to run the lines with me, but then there was like a delay, and for some reason we weren't up until the end of the day, and then when we were up shooting those scenes, I guess I just was fried. I couldn't remember anything, even though we had worked on it all day. And,
mm-hmm.
So afterwards, Frank Valentini, the executive producer, calls Brittany down to his office. Not me, he calls her. And basically he wanted to know what was wrong with me, like, what happened? Like, and she went to bat for me, and she's like, you know, he just had a long day, he has a lot of material to learn, and I ran it with him, and he was ready, but then he's just, you know, he got fried. And that happens to the best of us. I think any actor on a soap will tell you that somebody's just having a bad day.
And plus those are a lot of pages and chapters.
Yeah, and so I've never forgotten that. She came upstairs, and she came and saw me, and I said, is everything okay? And she explained, and I was just so appreciative and so grateful that she went to bat for me and stuck up, stuck up for me. And I think that's what, you know, when you have a good relationship with somebody and everybody is working towards the same goal and they all enjoy working with each other, I think that's what you do for each other. And certainly if I'm ever in the same position, I will do that for somebody else, but she did it for me, and I will never ever forget that.
She is such a sweetheart.
Yeah, she's the best.
I love her singing, and yours too. I just caught on that you sing. I didn't even know it until I got to hear some little clip for the Broadway musicals that you guys do for
ABC. I appreciate that. Yeah, we
that was a special treat. I'm like, okay, I know he was an actor, but I did not know he sang too. It's like, yeah, so this is cool.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Okay, so who on the set were the funniest and the silliest? I have my guess, but I'm curious to hear from you.
Well, I'm sure you've heard people talk about Tuck Watkins as David Vickers.
He's See, yes. Yeah, that's what I heard.
But the goofy, like, truly, like, the person that made me cry with laughter was Nick Roebuck as James Ford. He was so silly. And I guess maybe I brought it out of him, not to say that I'm responsible for it, but his sense of humor and mine is pretty similar. So he would goof around and it would just, I'd be in stitches and I'd be, like, crying with laughter. And still to this day, like, we'll text about something or he'll send me a voice memo and we have our little inside jokes that no one else will understand.
Yeah.
Out of the blue, he'll send me something and it'll make me laugh. So I would say Nick and Tuck. What were your guesses?
Actually, I thought it would be Vickers and Rex.
Oh, yeah. No, okay.
Because he's such a play goofball.
Yeah, John Paul is funny. His dressing room was right next to mine, and so I remember one day, I don't know why this made me laugh, but I know that Glengarry Glen Ross is one of his favorite movies, and so I'm like laying down in between, you know, setups or scenes or whatever, and so I'm in the dressing room laying down, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he starts watching that movie in his dressing room right next to mine, but he's like blasting it. It's like so loud. It's like, what is going on? And he's just like, well, this is my favorite movie. And I was like, I understand, but like, why are you watching it so loudly? It's like 11 in the morning. It just made me laugh because he was just so exuberant, so into it. So yeah, he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's really cute, but he's very so competitive in his own way.
Yeah, very much so.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
And him and Tuck hang out a lot, so I feel like it's that goofy persona, you know, they love being around each other, so that makes sense, too.
I love that. That guy is so cute, especially his scenes when he used to have so many with Dorian. They were hilarious together.
Oh, yeah. She's great, too. Robin's great.
Okay, so let's talk about your writing. So which shows sure. have you written for?
I have a show that I created and executive produced. And I'm in, actually. It's a scripted Western podcast. It's called Powder Burns, and it's available on Apple Podcasts. It's basically seven episodes of about a blind sheriff and his last week in office.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hired a lot of One Life alums. John Wesley Shipp, who played my dad on One Life, is on. He plays the blind sheriff on that. And Florencia Lozano is on there. Eddie Alderson plays a small role in a later episode. Barrett Helms. It's sort of a mini reunion of sorts.
Yeah. I got to hear it. I was really, really just invested so quickly because I won't lie. I love how the trailer just draws you in, and then I literally wanted to jump into the first episode. And as soon as it plays, it feels so Western that it feels so real. And I loved it. It was really good. Yeah. I'm on the first episode. So I got to listen to more. But the first episode, it really brought you, even if it was short, it was still like, it pulls you in. And as an audience, you want to hear that.
Thank you. You're welcome. I appreciate you saying that. It's a pretty good story. That's something that I really believe in. And it makes me feel good that you said that about the first episode, just because I think it took us about one episode to really find our footing, and then the rest of the story just kind of flies, and I'm very proud of it. We won an award for our sixth episode, and that's guest starring Ed Asner, who plays my character's father, is a sort of an aging cowboy losing his memory, and kind of what Alzheimer's might be like, you know, in 1860s Texas, when maybe we didn't know anything about what that was. And so my whole goal with the show was to try to take current modern issues and put them in an old Western and see how that translates. So our second episode, the one you're about to get to, is about a mentally challenged boy who holds up a bank, and you know, that could be a very current problem, you know, mm-hmm. you know how they deal with that. But you put it in the Western format, and it's a really compelling story. I think I'm very, very proud of the show.
I love Westerns. I grew up watching Little House on the Prairie and a lot of other Western shows. You'll laugh, even Bonanza. I love all of those. They're just so classics. You don't see much of that no more like that anymore these days. They, even if they rebooted, it still wouldn't be the same.
I agree. There's a wholesome quality to it. I'm all appreciative for the kind of television we're in today. I think we're in a golden age of television, but there's a grittiness to it, and we lose some of the wholesomeness. You know, not to make everything cheesy or whatever, but part of what I wanted to do with Powder Burns was sort of throw back to that era, mm-hmm. and make it sort of sound that way. And that's actually the other thing I'm writing right now. I wrote a play about Henry Fonda and Jimmy Stewart and their 50-year friendship. They were best friends and they were Hollywood legends, but they were also political opposites, which is a perfect play for what's going on in our country today. And so that play has been optioned by a company in New York, and we're working on getting it back on its feet. We were sort of on a roll, but then COVID-19 happened. So between those two things, it's sort of been my passion project to get these things off the ground that are throwbacks to older generation, but also make them interesting and new and exciting for a new generation.
I like that. That sounds really good. So are there going to be more seasons for the Powder Burns, or is it was just a limited run?
Well, as of now, it's a limited run. We did a Kickstarter campaign. I financed the first episode out of pocket with some help, and then, you know, we got some money to do some more episodes, and then it ended up costing a little bit more than I thought, so I essentially financed the last two episodes out of my own pocket as well, and I wasn't paying the actors a whole lot. I was paying them very, very little. Mm-hmm. They were worth a lot more than that, so if we do more, I would like to make sure we have money to pay people what they're worth, and I would love to do more, but it's one of those things of, like, unless we have the money to do it, I can't ask these actors to work for free, especially not after a pandemic.
Would you have to do another fundraiser?
I could. I didn't really realize until we did that how much work that is. It's a lot of hustle.
I'm sure it is.
And I think we have an audience there, but I also feel like it is obviously cheaper to do radio than it is to do television or film, simply because you don't have to pay a makeup person and you don't have to do a camera crew and all that. But I still want to make sure that people get paid what they're worth. So, we have an outline for what the next two seasons would be. We were thinking doing three seasons, but it just kind of depends on a number of things, but if it ended there after the seven episodes, because I'm very, very, very proud of how the show ended, I would be happy with that. I think that would be, a worthy thing for us.
Oh, that's good. That's good that you feel that you left it on a good note.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you, though, when you were talking about that sometimes shows are losing the realness of it, because I don't believe every single show deserves, just me, but I don't see every show needing a reboot. It doesn't have to happen every single show.
I agree. I think we need more original content. I mean, I understand that, reboots have a built-in audience, but I struggle with that. I feel like producers in general can be afraid of original content and of new writers and of new writing. And that's one of the reasons why I started writing the play, because the theater is a place where you can sort of, take a risk and feel like people will see it and accept it for what it is. Even though I'm writing a play that's based on people who really existed, the script itself is original. And so it's not a sequel to anything, or it's not, it's not Avengers Part 5, which I enjoy, but I feel like it's a safe choice now to do a superhero movie, because they know there's a built-in audience, so.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's like they're overusing the brand.
Yeah, they can be, and again, I'm a big fan, so, when John Wesley Shipp who plays the blind sheriff for us, when he was asked to go back on The Flash for CW because he originated the role in the 90s.
Oh, yes, I remember. Yeah, I remember him on The Flash, yeah. I'm giving my age away, but yeah, I remember him.
I was thrilled for him because that's a great revitalization of his career, and he deserves that and all of that. But within that, you know, I know that these projects and these movies, they also have a timeline. Like, I look at a show I really love, like Schitt's Creek, and a lot of people think that they ended that show too soon.
But, oh, I love that show. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. But the writers were thinking, oh, well, let's end it while we're ahead. Let's end it when we want to on our terms. So sometimes it's knowing when to walk away. Sometimes it's knowing when to squeeze more out of material. And I really admire people that do it. So it's a tough business, but it's a worthwhile business.
Yeah, I like that. That's true, though. To end on a good note so that it doesn't get too stale.
Yeah, I completely agree.
And it's sometimes hard to walk away, but yeah, as a writer, I hear what you're saying. It's a difficult decision to make, but as long as it's keeping the integrity of the original concept, then I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so let's see. If you were to return to daytime, which one would you choose and why?
Oh, wow. You know, I would... If someone offered me a job, I would go to any of them. But I was at one time a couple years ago. Me and Young and the Restless were sort of dancing around each other, and it looked like that might happen. And they ended up going a different direction. And I obviously live in New York, so you know, I can see that playing a factor as well. But I would not be picky, but I'd maybe say Young and the Restless simply because they've been good to me in the past and have auditioned me before, and they've been great people.
That's good. Would you play a recast, or would you play an original character? Which would you prefer?
I think I would. I would play a recast simply because, you know, work is work, and it's good work, but I also know that soap fans in general are very... they're very kind with understanding, you know, when someone comes in, they have to make a part their own.
Yeah.
So, I obviously, if I were to be recast, I wouldn't try to emulate exactly what someone else was doing, but I would at least want to know, you know, who the character is and how they've been done before so that I can at least honor that. I guess it just depends on the situation, but, you know, I'm open to it. I didn't film anything in 2020, so I do miss it. So you're asking an out of work actor if they would take a job. The answer
is yes. Yeah, I'm curious because I could see you playing the role of either the recast for either Noah Newman or Danny Romalati's son, which would be Daniel.
Yeah, I mean I would be.
Because you're still in that age range, you know, perfect age range that. You would fit perfect. You know, nothing on the actors. I wish them all the best if they returned. But it seems like they're not able to return very long. So if that's the case, then go ahead and recast and let the story continue. Because, like, Lola and Young and the Restless really need somebody that she needs to be with. And if they need to recast Noah, I could see you playing that role. Or I could see you bringing in Daniel Romalati in one way or the other. At least she'd have a possible love interest.
Well, I'm available.
Maybe we'll start a hashtag to bring you on a Young and the Restless. That'll be fun.
I'm into it.
What have you learned about yourself and around others during the COVID-19?
Oh, man, that's the biggest question.
It's a good challenge.
You know, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I hear this question asked a lot, and it's always unique to someone's situation. Mm-hmm. This time has been pretty tough on me and my family. At the time, my fiance and I found out that my future mother-in-law was not doing well. This was the beginning of the pandemic, and so we came to Ohio and planned a very quick wedding so that my future mother-in-law could be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first couple months of my wife's and I, the first couple months of our marriage was the end of her life. And so we all kind of rallied around her and tried to put family first and make sure that we were there for each other. And even in the best of circumstances, with all the warnings in the world and everyone preparing themselves emotionally, there's no way you can prepare for that. And so it was hard. And it really taught me that that you have to prioritize family and you have to allow yourself to grieve. And there's no, boy, if there was a way to speed that up for them, I would. Because it is very difficult and it is very emotional and erratic. There's no way to predict how you're going to be one day versus another, and then you start going through your birthdays and Christmas and other holidays that are painful because of the absence of that person. And so it's weird. It's almost like COVID-19 has exaggerated everything because we're forced in a weird way to stay, to sit with ourselves and you know, in a perfect world, I'd be like, well, after all of that, let's go on a vacation or let's, go back to work or do something to distract ourselves. But in this time, it's not necessarily easy to distract yourself. So I'm kind of leaning into that, and it's some days it's easier than others, and but it's necessary and it's important. And at the end of the day, family is everything. So I think that that's my biggest takeaway.
I like that. I see it the same as you on that. That as scary as COVID-19 is, I see it as this is our version of the Bible's Noah's Ark.
Oh, interesting.
It feels
okay.
Like we literally, and I hate to admit it, but in some way, I think we kind of did need this little reset because it puts our priorities in charge, and it does change your life to the better, even if people don't really see it that way, but. Sometimes, like, God gives us what he knows we can handle. Even if you think you can't handle it, he knows you can. So there's a lot of things to go into factor on that, but I still think that this is kind of our modern version of the resetted version of Noah's Ark.
That's a great point. To that point, I hope... I know, I grew up with a religious background as well, and I would hope that... You know, people don't believe that we're being punished for anything as a society, to that story. I mean, the end of that story is the reason why the rainbow exists is God's promise that he won't flood the earth again. And, you know, so my hope is I would like to believe that, you know, that God would not sanction a plague of sorts that would wipe out half a million people in the United States. But I also know that it's our choice to do it the way, you know, we can walk away with this, how intact we are. So I agree with you on that we have a choice of how to view this in hindsight. And I hope your family is safe. And mine certainly is as a whole.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yes, we're safe. We went through the whole situation of the with the COVID-19. That was scary because, like you, it hit close to home. So there's no way for it not to. It's like at some point somebody's going to get it. And so when my family, they got tested, and they got tested positive between my daughter, my sister, dad, and nephew. It was scary. We were like, oh, man, everybody's got it. But the thing was, we didn't know if it was like a false positive because they didn't show no symptoms.
Right. Yes.
And so either way, we still quarantined the over 18-day period, but we were very careful. And, you know, thankfully everybody's doing good now. We're all good. But it was just one of those things that, it literally makes you wake up to see what you have to do and how to handle it. You know, especially now, like when you're out in the public, you know, you just, it changes us. Like, you don't get so close to somebody like you used to. There's no hugs. You know, you can still kind of say hi, but you don't have to hug them. You can just be like, You know, kind of like on the TV, how they kind of like bump each other a little, but you didn't even have to bump. You just kind of wave high. It's kind of like that. I think it's kind of like transitioning us to do things better than what we used to do.
I think so. I think we'll definitely take some things going forward that we'll use in our daily life. And, even if it's just health protocols, I think will change. And I think that that's important. Like maybe going forward, people will be required to wear masks in a hospital. And maybe that's just how we do things. And maybe that's actually ultimately safer for everyone. I don't know what the long term is going to be. But
And you notice how the bars are closed. You know how bars are closed now? It's that's what I'm saying. It's kind of like a learning lesson because before it's like families weren't spending time with each other, but now you notice that they are.
Yes.
And so the bars are shut. So see, God works mysterious ways.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
So, let's see. Do you have any charities or hangouts that you'd like to give a shout out to?
Sure. Well, the Alzheimer's Association is very important to me. They, my father was diagnosed, I guess about 7 years ago now, and we are this week moving him into a nursing home, and so the work that they do is really important, and I do believe that they are going to find a cure, they or the sister companies around the world that are also researching, so I believe that they're important. And Seth Rogen and his wife, Laura, I believe her name is Laura, or Lauren, they have something called Hilarity for Charity, because her mother, I believe, had Alzheimer's as well. So they are trying to raise money actively for that, and I think that's really important. Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS is like one of the first major, I don't want to say charities, but one of the first major benefits I did when I was on the soap, and actually that's one of the things that we're working on for the 11th. They're going to get some of the soap actors from All My Children and General Hospital and One Life to Live to, we're going to sort of rewatch some of the old performances, and I'll also try to raise money you know, just bring awareness to Broadway Cares.
I heard about that. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll be really exciting. I think that's
I love musicals. I love musicals, especially if the Hollywood actors singing it, that's even better.
I think, yeah, and they're going to re-air some of our old performances from, I think, even like 10 years ago. And so it'll be a little walk down memory lane, of course. And,
nice.
It'll be cool. I think, those two are important to me. Black Lives Matter has always been important to me, especially in the last year we've had. And I've got some friends that are very closely tied to that as far as the work that they're doing. And so I think these are important things, to give a shout out to.
I like that. That sounds good. Do you have favorite three movies?
Oh, favorite three movies. Well, this changes constantly. Well, as I said before, writing this play about Henry Fonda and Jimmy Stewart, I feel like I've gotten very close to them, and they were huge influences on me as a kid as far as why I wanted to be an actor. So, there's a great movie. I think it's from 1959 or 1960, Anatomy of a Murder. It's a great courtroom drama, nominated for 7 Oscars. I think that's my favorite movie right now. Jimmy Stewart, Lee Remick. It's just a fantastic movie. Rear Window, great Hitchcock movie, also a Jimmy Stewart movie. And I love, there's so many. 12 Angry Men, Young Mr. Lincoln, great Henry Fonda movies. Those are like my go-tos. If I'm by myself and have a choice of what to watch, those are the kinds of movies I'll go for.
Wow, I like that. You just became official bestie. I love that. I love all the classics, and if it's good you love those classic moments, especially like me for music. I love the 80s and the classic Odie Goldies or Odie's Goldies or Goodies or something they call it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are your favorite two books that you've read or are reading?
The book I've got right now that I'm reading is The Soul of America, The Battle for Our Better Angels. That's by John Meacham. And I discovered it because I was listening to him, an interview with him on a podcast, and he's fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's, like me, grew up conservatively, but also is probably more moderate to liberal now, and just is very good at looking at our history and understanding where we've come from, where we're going, and why it's important to know our history. Mm-hmm. And I find his writing very accessible and loving, and he's just a gentle soul, and I think our country needs more of that right now. And the other book I read that just destroyed me was it's called Lincoln and the Bardo. It's George Saunders' first novel, I believe, and it's essentially about a grieving President Lincoln, whose son has just died, and it's the most accurate, poignant version of grief I've ever read. And the way the book is written, the way it's appeared on paper, is just—I know that sounds strange, but anybody that's read the book knows what I'm talking about. It just—it's really, really something. Those are the two off the top of my head.
Nice. I like that.
Adore them.
What about favorite two authors?
Well, I'll go with those two. I'll go with John Meacham and George Saunders. At least for now, that could change. Not that they're bad. But.
I hear you. Cool. Okay, since you love classics, I'm going to give you mine. Sure. Like Father Like Son, that's Kirk Douglas and Kirk Cameron?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kirk Douglas, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Over classic American Pie, because it's, you know, it's just so quirky and cute. And then, of course, you know, the Spider-Man with Tom Holland. Any Spider-Man title?
I was going to ask you which Spider-Man. Yeah, okay.
I love them all, but the main one I do like is Tom Holland. I take him the best right now.
Yeah, he's great. He's really great.
Are there any books that you've published or working on?
Well, I got a couple screenplays in the fire one just won an award at a film festival, and I'm actually working on getting that produced this year, and more on that when I know more.
Good.
But I did just contribute a chapter to a book called A Time to Heal, Stories of Hope and Inspiration, and that's by Brian Beckley, who used to write for Soap Opera Digest.
Ooh.
And the book is available on Amazon, and it's not just me. There's like Jordi Villarreal and Robert Palmer Watkins and a couple other soap people have contributed chapters to it. Chris Allen from American Idol, Abigail Hawk from Blue Bloods. I'm very proud of the book. I'm proud of Brian. I think he did an excellent job. And basically the idea of the book is just kind of walk people through different parts of their life that they might be struggling with. So the book is divided into different sections. And so there's, you know, mental health, addiction, LGBT, Q equality, and, you know, loss of a parent, spiritualism. So my chapter's on loss of a parent, which is sort of strange because my father is still alive, but he's obviously very ill. And
right.
But Brian's great. I've known him for years, and he's a big soap fan. He's a big advocate for us, and he's a great writer. And I was happy to be asked. I've never been asked to help write a book before. So that's
beautiful. I love that. Send me the link for that. I would love to check that out. That sounds awesome.
Sure.
Yeah. I got to interview Palmer, which was, everyone knows, is ex-Dylan from, ex-Dylan Quartermain from General Hospital. I recently got to interview him thanks to Take Two Radio. I don't know if you knew this, but I'm a co-host over there now.
Yeah.
I love it. They are such a wonderful group. I love them. So, yeah, they're awesome.
That's wonderful.
So, let's see here. If you did a motion picture in Hollywood, which director would you like to be in the project?
Oh, man. Well, this is sort of strange.
Heavy hitter questions today.
Well, yeah, no, I had this this script that was a finalist in a competition last year, and it was doing pretty well, and in my heart of hearts, I had it in my phone. The director that I wanted is this director named Lynn Shelton, who did this great movie called Your Sister's Sister that I really liked, and she's directs a lot of independent movies, and she's really, really great. She's the partner of Marc Maron, and he spoke very highly of her, and I really like listening to interviews with her. I liked her eye, as they say, and I like the way she directed films. But then she passed away very, very suddenly last year. And so she was obviously like at the top of my list, but she's no longer with us. So it's tricky, man. I think, you know, there's obviously the heavy hitters like Spielberg and Scorsese. I think any actor would jump at everything. I'm a big, you know, we were talking about Westerns earlier. I'm a big Clint Eastwood fan. And I know he's, what, 90 years old now? Or like,
can you imagine if you worked with him on a project? I think that would be full circle.
Oh, it sure would be. You know, it's tricky. Sometimes they say never meet your heroes, but sometimes I'm like, well, how else are you going to learn unless you meet your heroes?
There you go.
I'm about meeting my hero.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that. So, which two actors would you like to work alongside?
Wow. I am fortunate that any of the actors that I've worked closely with in the last, well, since I started doing this, I would love to work with again, any of them, especially from the soap, because they're all loving and professional and funny and smart.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess aside from that, big movie stars, well, I'll go with ones that are no longer with us, because that's an interesting answer. Henry Fonda or Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, cool. I like that. That's so cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Three foods that you would never eat.
Okay. slimy things. Anything slimy.
Okay. Okay.
So let's go with clams or oysters. I can't do it. I know they're supposedly good. I can't.
Wow. I'm surprised because you hear so much about oysters.
Can't do it.
I can't either. Don't feel bad. I don't eat it. What else?
Can't do it. I'm not a fan of egg salad. I can eat hard-boiled eggs like on a salad.
Okay.
But egg salad itself, I don't know if I can do that either.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I've had calamari, but like squid by itself, I don't think
there you go. I've had calamari too, and it's very, very, that's about it, really.
You fry the shit out of it, and I'm good.
What's the third one?
Oysters, squid, and egg salad. Let's say egg salad.
Okay. Okay. What? Okay. Here's the big one. Three pet peeves.
Oh, sure. Well, I used to work in a restaurant, and so you see a lot, and it sort of illuminates a lot of how people are. So, I cannot stand people who treat people badly.
Yeah.
I cannot stand it. I don't think there's room for that. People that are messy, I guess. Not that, you know, I'm obviously have my moments of being messy, but
yeah, like, I hear what you're saying.
I also learned this at the restaurant: people that don't listen, like when someone doesn't listen, like actively listen and take in what the other person's saying and just kind of like barrels over them. I have very little tolerance with that.
Oh my god, it's so cool! I love that we're connecting. I feel like that too. I used to work with that the restaurant field. Oh my god, you learn a lot. You really do. Yeah, you learn the people, how people are, and their personalities. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you were involved in a Western drama series, could you tell us more about how you were taping the episodes? Just like a little hint of some magic behind the scenes, sort of.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's interesting because with doing a radio play, essentially, you know, sometimes it was hard to schedule all the actors together, so we would come up with clever ways to work around that.
Uh-huh.
And so, for instance, in the sixth episode, Ed Asner, obviously from Up or Elf, or many people know him for many things. So he came in to play my character's father, but John Wesley Shipp, who played the blind sheriff, was not available to tape that day. So basically, I read John's lines opposite Ed, and then John and I had a separate recording session where we did our own parts, and then we put the two takes together, and you will never know in listening to the episode that not all the actors are in the same room, and that's because we had other actors. One of our cast members, Matt Locker, came in to read lines opposite us so that we were able to, you know, hear another voice. So it's a cool little trick that you can't do when you film something that you can do in the radio, and it actually works out. So we're able to do a lot more despite people's busy schedules. It works out. It's kind of neat.
I like that. I like that. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to skip this one that I was going to ask you if you need future projects lined up, but because you already mentioned earlier that you're doing the screenplay, we'll move that one ahead because we've talked about that one. So the sure. next one would be any advice to future actors?
Yeah. Well, okay. Here you go. I don't know if I'm in a position to give advice, but if you're really interested in it, you're going to get told no a lot. So it's important to have your resolve first. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean, this is all I've ever wanted to do in my entire life, but it's also the hardest thing I've ever done. So when you get told no, it's not a rejection necessarily of your talent. It's just you saying, well, I'm still going to do this, so it doesn't matter. And I say that because, I went after the soap, I think it was 2015, I went a whole year without getting a job. And that doesn't mean I'm a bad actor. That doesn't mean I suddenly became bad at what I do. I just happened to not be getting a job. And I think it's very easy for actors to assume that the job is a validation of their talent. And that's, if you look at it that way, then you're going to be disappointed a lot.
Yeah.
So it's important to remember that you want to do this and that it's important to you, so that when you have those days or those months of struggle or years, that you're like, well, I still want to do it. And I actually was thinking about this the other day because there were moments where I thought, well, maybe I'll quit. Mm. But because I was in New York and working survival jobs or whatever, I realized that there was no difference in my life between me quitting and me sticking it out. The day-to-day routine was exactly the same, and I still would, be on my computer writing my scripts. So I was like, if my life doesn't change, then I'm going to keep sticking this out, and I'm so glad I did, because there's always great reward in that.
I like that. That's really sage advice. I like that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, which two primetime shows would you cameo on?
Well, I don't know if I would cameo. I would want to do more than that, but I'd say, I love all these period dramas, and because I love all the old movies, like I was watching Perry Mason the other day.
Yeah,
I really, really liked that, and so to me, I have this soft spot to be a cowboy, so maybe Yellowstone or, well, Longmire's not on TV anymore, but I love
Texas Walker's
like
coming out.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, there's always a Western to begin.
There you go. You got an excuse to be a cowboy again.
Yeah.
I could see you being on The Rookie.
Oh, I would love to do that. Oh, my God. That's
like
great.
A cop?
I would love that.
That's the mystery cop trying to find out what's going on, like, what you got on like, all these people. I think that would be fun. And, of course, there's also 911 Lone Star.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
We'll figure something out. Between us fans, we always find a way to put our favorites on back on the air. Let's see. Three getaway locations that you yet to travel to.
Well, my wife and I still haven't taken a honeymoon. So I would love, to go on a honeymoon. But, so here's the thing with me and traveling. I think I just have two criteria. One is that it has to be beautiful, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the other is that it would be nice if it had some sort of historical significance. Okay. So with those two criteria, like Italy is at the top of the list. I've been to London. I'd love to go back. I don't know if it's where we should honeymoon. I've talked to some friends that have been to Paris, obviously. Maybe Mexico, maybe, I don't know, some island somewhere where, typical honeymoon destination. But I like to have a dual reason. So not just the beauty, but also history. Those are my criteria. Anywhere else, I'm game to go.
I like that. That's really cool. All right, I know you gotta go. I've got just let me see. I had two quick things from fans here that had some email that they sent out. Let me see if I can find it for you.
Sure. Yeah. I'm nervous. Should I be nervous?
I know, right? It's just here. I know she had it in here somewhere because she wrote it in the middle of the chats. Let's see. Okay, let's see. I gotta find the other one because let's see. They're in here somewhere. Oh, I'm having trouble with my internet. It's not scrolling very good. But I do appreciate that you got to spend time with us, and I definitely would love to have you back maybe around March or April.
Sure, man. And we can get to those questions whenever you I'm always game. People can find me on social media and ask me questions as well, and I'm usually pretty quick to answer. So,
okay, where can they find you on your media? Which ones are you on?
So I'm on Instagram and Twitter, and it's David A. Gregg on both platforms.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, and you have a blessed day, and prayers for all your family.
Thank you, Willie. You too. I appreciate it.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.